Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Yes, here we go. I'm already having a great time talking to this guest. She's great. Love her to pieces. Amy Lee Westervelt, mentor, mystic, mother, goddess, dream design coach, but also a kind of indefinable, which I love. Amy Lee originally, now here's, I'll give some background before we give her a proper greeting, told me that every time she speaks, people's minds get blown. So I was like, okay, gotta get this woman on the show. And constantly redefining, I mean, I've been following Amy Lee for a while now, and she delves into a little bit of alchemy, a little bit of glamour, a little bit of glitz, manifestation, all the kinds of interesting stuff, living the life of your dreams. And what's interesting is that I feel that her aesthetic matches what she's really creating spiritually in the world too, which I really want to dig into today. But yes, let's get into it. The dream design coach, a human design master, I think. I don't know. Are you? Amy Lee Westervelt, pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It is always my sincere pleasure to be here. I'd say always because we already did this, but it got deleted.
Oh, okay. So she let it out of the bag. I was wondering if she was going to go there. Okay, well, it's fine. You know, there was an episode that was recorded previously about Amy Lee. With Amy Lee, it was very good, but I don't know what happened. I mean, was it... I don't know. I mean, okay, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start here. Miss Mystic, does everything like that happen for a reason? And if so, why do you believe that? Or are there such things as happy accidents? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's so interesting you say that because I had this download recently that we have this idea of like free will or not, right? So you've got like the religious zealots who are like, well, you know, God's in charge and he's the one who decides. And then it's like, but you also have free will. And so there's like this spectrum. But what I came to realize recently is that what if there is a component of you that you are completely unaware of and disassociated from by virtue of your human self versus your higher self? And that part of you is, in effect, making decisions for your well-being and for the greatest good of you and for all concerned, but you aren't aware that that is part of you. And so from your standpoint, you don't have free will and things just happen. But from the standpoint of the wholeness of you and all the pieces that you're not aware of part of the collective consciousness, you are in fact affecting every moment all the time.
That's intriguing. Huh. So wait, how do you then, if that's the case, well, I'm curious where, was there something specific in your life where this download came from?
No, that's not how downloads work. Downloads are like, watching like, what are shows that people watch, like Vanderpump Rules? And then all of a sudden, you know what? Like, remember I told you about the Tupac one on the last one? How it just like, all of a sudden, that's a download. A download just like pops in. It's like, here's something you thought you knew and you didn't know, or you didn't know and you do know.
Of course you picked Vanderpump because it sounds like it's someone in your family. It's a cousin. Is there a famous duel where the Westervelts versus the Vanderpumps? I could see it. It's some Irish feud that's been going on for centuries.
That makes sense, yeah. Westervelt means Western fields, and it's actually Dutch, I guess. And my husband informed me that our children are the 12th generation of Westervelts in the United States.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, so great that you sound like you could be in The Sound of Music with a last name like that. It is good. It is good. I love it. Though it is kind of interesting. Westervelt. I mean, is it it feels like it's such an industrial name for mystic. You know what? Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think about changing your name for the business?
No. I mean, with everything I know about numerology and you know, the way that spells and letters and things like that affect us, I wouldn't want to change the trajectory of who I'm here to be. And I definitely don't want to go by Goldstein. So there's that.
What? Hey, okay, great. I'll think about that. What you're... no, but...
It's my maiden name in case you guys didn't pick that up.
I know. Well, you know what? I mean, it's interesting, though, because I feel that there are... And I'm curious your thoughts on this. This is where I think we could have a really interesting conversation beyond the one that was probably already in my head, which is usually always the more interesting one, isn't it? I'm curious about your take on trends in this spiritual coaching world, because I definitely think that, and I know this from seeing theater and showbiz and having gone to school for acting, you got to have a stage name often. People change their name all the time. People are getting headshots and whatnot. And it's interesting that in personal development, it became so much about very similar things, about personal branding, about being a persona, even sometimes more than the work. And I'm not saying you do this, Amy Lee, because I've read your testimonials, and I know that from We've Talked, you're really digging into some stuff that is transforming people. But we both know that there are people out there that seem to get excited by the prospect of becoming a leader in the world, and all the, I mean, I hate to use the word glamour, but I want you to redefine it, because I know you use it in a different way, but all the glamour and prestige that comes with, I'm going to lead people and help people and be this Tony Robbins, Oprah Winfrey, Mel Robbins figure. I mean, what is your take on that? Do you, because I feel like you use it, but you really, as I said earlier, I feel like the aesthetic is part of kind of the spiritual principle. You're embodying it. I mean, what is up with people changing their name and really taking on this role, in a sense, that's even beyond maybe the work they were called to do?
I think that's a really good question. And I think it's going to be a different answer for absolutely everyone. I think that a lot of people think that spiritual development and this work, if they were to only look at social media, they would think that everybody who does this work wants to be famous and wants to be a multi-bazillionaire and wants to be on billboards or be on stage with Tony Robbins. And I think that there's actually, there's a spectrum, right? There are some people that absolutely love it. I have my friend Marta. I'll get her on your show one of these days. She's the Spitfire. She loves to do stages. She loves to teach about TED Talks. She loves nothing more than pacing around and having people in front of her and just commanding people with her voice. And she does it so eloquently. And I don't hate the idea of being in front of people, but I'm a hermit, right? Like my human design is I'm a hermit. And so this is actually my own bedroom that you see behind me. I have an alcove in my bedroom that I work from, and I enjoy being in my own space. So for me, wealth and luxury and all those things are lovely, but those would be things that I would want for my own reasons, not so I could throw them out to the world, right? Now, there are some pieces of edifice that I absolutely ascribe to, and I'm very transparent about. For example, I just went on a rant the other day about filters. I like using filters. I have 5 small children. One of them has special needs. I love the idea that I can hold my phone up and it puts my makeup on for me. Yes, please. Now, I don't go out there and say that that's my actual face. I mean, number one, it says that it's a filter right at the bottom. But number two, I'm not selling makeup either. I'm not selling photo finishing. I'm not being misleading when I say like, hey, this makes my life easier, right? I also have chronic fatigue. Like, I'm like, okay, what do I put on next? What goes next? Like, I have ADD. And so I embrace those things, right? Like things that, I mean, it's like AI, like everybody's like all about AI and adding AI to their email lists and everything else, but it's like filters. They're like, oh, that's so disingenuous. Really? Is it disingenuous? I don't think so. So on that respect, yes, glamour all day long. Like you'll see me go get photo shoots and I wear cute clothes and I have my photos touched up because that's my persona. If you look at, like, can you imagine going up to RuPaul and saying, you know what? I really think you look better as a dude.
Like, right.
No, because it's a persona, right? So in the coaching world, some of us, we're more energetically grounded when we step into, in my case, the goddess, right? The goddess is the inner self. I mean, you have an inner god too, but like the inner self, the divinity, the part of us that is so deeply connected to spirit and advocates for us unequivocally. And that part of me, yeah, she looks good. You know, the person that I am when I'm changing dirty diapers and I've got shit sliding down my pants, not the same person. And you're not going to see that person on social media. Is that disingenuous? I don't think so. I think it's no more like if I go to the corner store in my underwear, you're going to be like, why don't you have clothes on? Well, I don't wear clothes at home, so I didn't want to be disingenuous. Like it doesn't work, right? Now, do I think that there are some people that create above and beyond and really go so far as to make themselves seem like they're cooler than they are? Yeah. I mean, I have friends who buy followers on Instagram and I'm like, dude, why? I actually hid how many people like my stuff. I don't want you to know how many. It doesn't matter. Do you resonate or don't you? It's not about whether you resonate based on who else resonated. Like that feels disgusting to me. Now, you touched on the glamour piece. And so for me, gratitude and glamour, which is kind of the sub-brand of my Amy Lee Westervelt and kind of where I started, is about gratitude for what we already have. And glamour is about aspiring to more. What is that thing that lights you up? In my case, in your case, we're generators. So it's all about the sacral. So what gets you to that next place? What gets you to do the work to get to where you want to go again and again and again? If you just stagnate, if you just get to where you have everything, you end up like celebrities and it all ends up your nose, or you die, like retired people who die within 15 years of retiring. A lot of times they go to these villages in Florida and they just pass away and then they turn around and sell their house and reverse mortgage. Why? Because they stopped doing, they stopped living, they stopped aspiring. So for me, glamour is about whatever it is that's the next level for you. Where are you pushing? Where are you going? Where are you striving for that you've never been before, or that you want to go for even longer, or that you want to take yourself to the next level? That's what glamour is. It's not about looking cute or, you know, spending money on renting a Lambo for the day. It's about what truly lights you up and what's your next level.
That's very interesting. I'm curious how you landed on that word glamour.
I think at the time when I had 2 small children living in Alaska where the air hurt my face, I think that the aspiration at that time was to feel whole and beautiful and complete. And I think at the time, at 30 whatever years old I was, the alliteration was there. We loved that. But also, I think that I really, at that time in my life, wanted to be seen as and feel like the whole package. And so I think that's where it came from, but it has absolutely grown and matured in a much deeper, more profound way. And even though I don't really use it as much in my brand, I mean, it's kind of like part of the ethos more than the brand itself. But it's served me really well. And it's definitely something that I think I'm going to take with me. I'm also kind of picking up what I'm calling the magnetic goddess, magnetic from being the sacral generator. So I'm actually moving my podcast from the Dream Design Coach or whatever it is, Dream Design Podcast. We're switching it over to the magnetic goddess. You heard that here first, by the way. That is not something that I've actually, I posted a picture and I teased, but I didn't say what it was. So
yes. Okay. Yeah. So we're getting exclusives.
You're getting exclusives.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. What do you think is the difference? I mean, what is the work different from being a dream design coach to magnetic goddess? And how is it different?
Well, at the beginning, especially, you know, I don't know if it was on the last episode or not, but you know that I was in multi-level marketing. And I made lots of money doing that. And that was, you know, that was where I amassed all the crap, right? Amassing crap is what you do when you make lots of money really fast. You buy a bunch of stuff and then you kind of try to figure out what to do with it after the fact. And so for me, it used to be about manifestation. It used to be about what can I get? What can I bring? What can I create? What experiences can I have? How can I just zhuzh up my life more and more and more? And one day I actually realized, so this is a funny story that you don't know, but you're going to know it right now. The human design master, as you've called me, had her human design wrong.
It wasn't because
I didn't do the system right. It was because I had my birth time wrong. And I didn't actually have my birth time wrong a long time ago when I very first looked at human design. I guessed on my birth time. And that was the chart that I carried with me for years and years, not realizing that it was wrong. I had my birth chart wrong for a long time too, but I rectified that pretty quickly. It never occurred to me that I'd done the same thing with my human design. So as a result of that, I, for the first 2 years of discovering human design, thought that I was a 5-1. The 5-1 is very much the visionary archetype. They're usually pretty extroverted. It's very much a transpersonal energy of like, I'm here to save the world, right? It's very much like, here I am. I'm going to help you. I'm going to save you. Listen to me. I'm going to learn all the things and then I'm going to turn around and teach them to you. And that was my human design. And it didn't really resonate. I always felt like, I don't really want to go out there and find you. If you find me, that's great. And people would come to me and say like, how do you do that? How do you know how to do it? And I'm like, I don't really know. I guess this is just kind of how I am. How do you know that about me? I didn't tell you that. How did you know? And it wasn't until I realized that I had my human design wrong that I'm actually a 5-2. And the two, yep, I see you, source. And the two is all about the hermit. It's all about being by yourself. And it's like, yeah, I have the answers. Leave me alone. If I want to give them to you, I'll give them to you. And it's very different energy. So what I realized in that, I swear I'm getting to the answer to your question, is that I'm not here to go out and amass and do and conquer. I'm here to conquer the part of me that tells me that I need anything outside of myself. So that was a big shift for me to realize I'm not here to manipulate everything around me to be what I want it to be. I'm here to accept that this is who I'm here to be and to manipulate the inside of myself so that the outside starts to balance. That was the big shift that I made. And so once I started doing that, I was doing this with my clients too. Instead of trying to help them manifest their dream lives, I was trying to figure out why they didn't already have it. We were tweaking things inside. We were shifting limiting beliefs. We were doing some NLP work, some hypnosis, a little bit of memory revision and all these things. And then all of a sudden, their outer lives were starting to get better. And their spouse, and they were getting along better with their spouse without ever having to talk to them. Without ever having to really affect any of these things, those things were falling into line because they were simply reflections of who they were. So I started to do that work in my life, and then I started to help clients do that work in their lives. And then before we knew it, it was like, hey, are you still doing that thing And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, the magnetic, yeah, the goddess activation. And so that became really popular. And that's kind of where my work has gone. It's like, I don't call myself a relationship coach because relationships are conditional. They always depend on the other person. The work I do depends on no one but my client. It only depends on how you are and what you believe and how you feel and how you're interacting with the outside world. And I can guarantee you, anytime somebody comes to me with a problem, I can go and we can look at inside of what limiting beliefs they have or what's going on. We can find out where that's happening inside of them that's reflecting outside of them. So that's where the shift has really come. It's not about, like you said, the aspirational, the you get a car and you get a car. It's more like, let's just glow from the inside out where people are literally like, I don't know what you're selling, what you're doing, who you are, where you came from, but please sell it to me right now. Here's my card information. That's the kind of energy that I want to have.
That's interesting, especially with, what do you use? Do you use the term infinite income on your website, or is it infinite abundance? I forget. There's a term you have. You say, wait a minute. I'm going to pull this up right now. I want, yes, incredible relationships and infinite income. Now look, one might argue that's on the outside, but I can also see how income has to start inside. I mean, everybody talks about money blocks and stuff like that.
Money blocks are real.
What do you mean by infinite income?
Well, like I said, this is in progress, but at the time, infinite income meant there's no limit to how much stuff you can amass, right?
Right,
like
right.
The Bloomberg, you know, how like Mike Bloomberg, like he's like Scrooge McDuck. He can swim around in like money in a vault. Like he has so much. He just goes around, you know, torpedoing elections just because he can, like that kind of money.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant by that's what I meant by infinite income. But what I really mean at this point and what I understand is that you get to a point where you don't need anything. And anything you ever do need, it magnetizes to you because you don't need it. So it's not about getting everything you need. It's about recognizing that you don't need it. And that feeling of not needing something is the most attractive, sexy, delicious feeling in the world. When something is just like, oh yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, you can come over if you want. I mean, yeah, sure. There's a seat there. It's like so good. But like you sit down next to a girl at a bar and she's like, no, no one's sitting there. You can sit there. Do you want to talk? Like, this would be so great. You're like, oh my God, I don't care if you look like Heidi Klum. This is over before it started. It has nothing to do with it. Look, it's the energy. It's the desperation. And so many clients of mine have this desperation energy. It just reeks of like, I need something. I want something. I'm missing something. I'm lacking something. When we shift that, they're like, you're not going to, that's my favorite thing. People come into my DMs all the time and be like, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe. Yes, I am. Of course I am. This is the work I do. Like, yes, I'm going to believe it. Tell me.
Yeah. I remember that from last time. I remember that you do have this, well, it is, you're one, you have the, let's see, I don't know, would you call yourself a psychic?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely psychic. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because there were a lot of the stories we covered last time were a lot of people going, how the heck did she know that? What the heck? What is she saying here? She said this thing during a session and it just came out of nowhere. I mean, are you still experiencing stuff like that? Is that still part of the draw?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I woke up this morning. Like literally, I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, it's Sunday. So I'm doing my card readings today. And I was like, because I've really been playing with, see, I had this realization that my brand and what I do in my work, and I hope this is helpful to listeners. I think you have entrepreneurs out there. So if this sounds very Amy Lee centric, it's my hope that it's not. It's my hope that it's providing value. And I realized that I spent so much time worried about how other people would receive my work and a lot less time about how much I enjoyed creating the work or how much I enjoyed being in the work. And so when I woke up this morning, I was like, I was thinking recently about my brand and kind of like what feels good? What am I doing that, you know, maybe historically has been people pleasy, or what am I trying to do to like make people, I know they'll love this, you know, like that kind of feeling. And so Sunday nights I do card readings on my personal page. And I was like, am I doing that for them or am I doing that for me? And then I started thinking like, is that even why do people who watch those even hire me? And I realized that there's almost like a disconnect between the client that hires me is very practical. She's very alpha female. She's very like, I need a little bit more of that woo in my life. And the people who follow me and who interact with me are kind of more of like the woo-woo people, you know what I mean? So there's kind of this dichotomy. I would say that most of my clients don't even know that I'm psychic until it happens to them. It's not something that I kind of am like, oh, I'm a psychic. Like, I'm not that kind of psychic. It's just a tool that I'm able to use in my work, just like human design or NLP or hypnosis or any of the other tools. You know, psychic connection is a way for me to connect with the part of them, their higher self, that they don't necessarily feel connected to, and to help get them the help that they've been trying to give themselves, but they discount because they don't really, they feel like it's their inner dialogue, or, oh, well, that's just because, well, of course I want that. It's my agendas and all the other ways that they've been conditioned to believe that advocating for themselves in any way is selfish. I kind of go in and say like, hey, so this is what's coming through right now. Is this true? And it's like, how did you know that? I buried that. No, you didn't. It's right here. And it's literally in my ear going, don't forget to ask about this.
Yeah. I will say, you know, you sent me into a tailspin for a second because you're like, oh, yeah, I'm sure entrepreneurs listen to this. I'm going, Amy Lee, I don't know who is listening to this right now. In the sense that, look, this conversation is, to me, okay, so here's what's interesting. The goal, which I know is very broad, is to have as mind-bending and mind-blowing a conversation as possible, to challenge existing belief systems as humanly possible. I mean, and you do this in many different ways. I mean, one of the things that sticks out from last time that I'm still sitting around and going, huh, that is crazy, is the, and I'm curious if you have evolved thoughts on this, the paradigm of hard work not necessarily equaling pay. We're talking a lot about life being not fair, and you said, well, what about janitors? And look how hard they're working, but why aren't they making six figures a year necessarily? And I've been thinking a lot about that in all aspects of life. I'm going through the world and going, oh my gosh, what is this job? This job is terrible. And yet, you know, you see someone that sells a course online and maybe they, I do think they put some initial upfront time into that and gained the knowledge necessary to do it. But, you know, there's abundance comes in, abundance doesn't have one way of looking in the world, and certainly this notion of hard work, yet there have to be people out there that still do some of those jobs. So I guess it's a question of, without going into things like universal basic income and whatnot and things that it might be scary, is there have you thought about the way, well, let me stop there. What are your thoughts on that? The way the world works as it is, hard work versus the amount of money you may receive for that hard work.
Well, I think it all comes down to belief. I think that anything that's ever been invented was not invented because we finally found the answer, but because we were ready to stop looking. I think that when we believe that something's going to happen, that's actually where the catalyst happens. That's where we make the shift. And so I think that if you believe that money is hard to come by, you're going to experience a life where money is hard to come by. If you believe that money comes easily and often, you're going to experience a life where money comes easily and often. Now, that doesn't mean if you say money comes easily and often, but you still believe that it's hard. I mean, if you genuinely believe it, that's the consciousness that controls the quantum field. And I know we're not certainly going to get into the quantum field today. Like, we don't have time to really delve into all of that. But what it comes down to, and here's going to be the most controversial thing I probably ever say on the internet, but here you go. If anybody was going to get it, it'd be you. Whenever you hear somebody tell somebody else that they're oppressed, that's when you've got to look for where their hand is trying to go up their skirt and puppet them. Like, the person who tells you that you're oppressed is probably trying to oppress you themselves. They're probably trying to circumvent your power in their own way, but just away from whatever it is they're telling you is taking you. So, for example, let's talk about the women's rights movement, feminism. I personally think feminism in its traditional form is one of the most toxic things for women. Why? Because feminism teaches women to go completely against their feminine authority, their divine feminine instinct. And not only does it dismantle their connection to whoever their masculine partner is, and yes, that includes if their partner is a woman who is masculine, but it also dismantles their connection, their divine feminine connection from source, from the universe, which is the masculine energy in the dichotomy, in the relationship between a person and source, right? If you think about it, source is the great giver, the I'll go get it for you, here you go. Like, that's where the stuff comes from, is from the manifesting and the creativity and the let's see what I want and the nurturing and the gentleness and all of that comes from the human, which in the case of the human versus the universe, we're all bottoms. So that means that even you are the divine feminine in your relationship with the universe. So we've got these feminists who are like, men are oppressing you. They're making more money than you. They're doing this. You shouldn't trust them. Make sure that you don't ever get into a relationship with one because he'll just screw you over, and marching in the streets with vagina hats on and all these things. And what they're effectively doing is they're making sure that there are no partnerships created between the divine masculine and the feminine. Now, why would we do that? Well, because when we can do that and we can make sure that Adam and Eve, so to speak, don't come together because of this giant tree in between them, now what we're essentially doing is making sure that everybody has to depend on something outside of themselves to protect them. So in this case, the system is gaining back all of that momentum and all of that power from these women who were like, yeah, men are out to get us and da-da-da, and you can't be safe, and creating a chasm, because in divine union, when a masculine and a feminine come together, there's a transmutation, which if you're an occultist, they call magic, right? Sex magic, there's magic, actually creates, catalyzes transformation, manifestation beyond our wildest dreams. If I can do that with my partner, why do I need the system? Why do I need politicians? Why do I need social systems? Why do I need you to protect me if I'm already sovereign? So we can't have that. So what's actually happening is everywhere you see someone telling someone that they're oppressed, you're oppressed. That person oppressed you, and that's why you need to vote for me, because I'm going to save you. How freaking demoralizing is that, to tell a grown man, you're oppressed, but I'm going to stick up for you. I'm more powerful than you. Effectively, by telling someone they're oppressed, you're telling them that they're less than, right? And so that, I think, is really kind of where we are as a society, and where a lot of the mystics, a lot of the truth sayers, you know, tend to fall a little more on the, I'm going to say the word and everyone's going to run screaming, conservative side, because the conservative side politically thinks that we're all equal. And it's like, let me show you how to do this so you can do it too, rather than me going, you poor thing, you're a woman. Oh, let me give you some money because that guy over there, he doesn't believe in you. I believe in you. And that's why I'm going to make sure that you never feel equal. I'm going to make sure that you always need to be supplemented to feel like you're good enough. Oh, and by the way, will you vote for me? Thanks.
Right.
And so that's what I see going on. And so from a holistic perspective, from a download perspective, what we're seeing is the subjugation of people's sovereignty in the name of advocacy.
Whoa. Now, this is a very interesting view. Let me think about this. How am I going to respond to this in a way that's going to really challenge your narrative? No, that's not my goal. But I do want to figure out, because, okay, here's what runs through my head when you say that. I feel that this view, it feels very empowering, which I love. I love that it's about, you know, it's the classic be the change you want to see in the world. It's something I did get into the spot. I mean, I didn't know how much of the message I was going to get from mystical-minded people on the show was going to be, yeah, yo, dude, it starts with you. It's Gandhi. It's all this stuff that we hold to be, you know, as sacred truths of don't wait for the world to change. You change first. Be the example. Be the leader. Now, that said, there's so many people on the other. I mean, there's so many people that just, I mean, they're like, yeah, that's all great and stuff, but there are systems in place that create a systemic kind of,
100%. And I'm not denying that.
To me, it feels like there has to be balance somewhere. So what do you think? Do you have any ways that you're able to tap into, is it just a feeling? I mean, what's the difference between an agenda based oppression versus something where you go, yeah, you know what, there are a group of people that probably actually could make this better for everybody.
Because most of the people who point out the problem don't fix the problem. They just point it out that somebody else is doing it. But I'm going to fix it. I'm going to help you. So then you vote for them or whatever. You bring them into the equation. They don't fix it. We still have the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got all the, let's use, you know, civil rights, right? You've had thousands of, or not thousands, you've had, I don't know, handfuls of years where you've had people who claim to be, you know, change makers in the world that are going to do these different things. I mean, look at New York. New York is a very blue state, right? How do they live with themselves having these giant Section 8 housing apartments that are in the ghetto? Like, if you really genuinely believe that people are equal and that they deserve to, then how could you let them live in squalor like that? Mow those down and make beautiful little houses and let them live, you know, have people live there and have them write an essay to determine which one they live in. Like, utilize their brains. Don't just put them somewhere out of town where, you know, you kind of turn a blind eye to if they smoke crack, you don't really care. Like, don't pretend that you care if you don't care. And I think that's really where the frustration lies for me, is like, you're not fooling anybody. You talk about this equality and then you turn around, you know, you take a picture with Miss Jones's second grade class at Hurston Elementary, and then you let them all get on buses and go back to the ghetto. Like, if you really genuinely cared, how come this is still a problem this many years later? If you genuinely want to help these people, why haven't you done it? I mean, you know, you can say whatever you want about Donald Trump. Like, I have my own issues with him, but he had this idea of this platinum plan where he was going to put all this money, I mean, like millions and millions of dollars into, you know, people of color organizations and all these things. And it was like, they didn't want it. Like, people didn't want it because it was actually going to fix it. And they say, you know, when a politician sees the light at the end of a tunnel, he builds more tunnel. Because we don't want resolution. We want activation. We want children in schools to, I mean, like, so what's going on right now, you've got, you know, the transgender movement. Now, let me stop here and tell you.
Oh my gosh, we are jumping. Yes, yes, yes.
Let me stop here and tell you that when I was a little girl, I was born, you know this, I was born Catholic, and I always felt like I was Jewish. And I used to talk about, and I did convert, you know that, and I did talk about how it was like being born in the wrong body, okay? So I 100% support the transgender movement. I believe people are born in the wrong body. I believe that that is a thing, and I believe those people should be advocated for. But I also believe that it's like 1% of the population, and it's not something that needs to overtake the narrative of the entire country. So what we've got going on right now is that the schools have figured out, or, you know, whatever, the society has figured out, well, if we can tell these kids that their parents did these horrible things, be it, you know, owned slaves. I'm from Boston. My family never owned slaves. They were Irish. They didn't own slaves. But if we can tell these children that their parents owned slaves and get them really good and angry, but then say, but hold on, hold on. We can give you something that's going to make you different. You don't have to be counted among those horrible white settler plantation people. You can be non-binary. You can have a different first pronoun, and it will make you so different. And now you can fight with us against your terrible parents. And so they're creating, they're amassing this army in the school system of children who believe that they're different, that they're special, that they're something, that they can now turn around and be against the society that they came from because they're different. Do you honestly think that the country as a whole, that the government cares about what's between your legs? They don't. They just want to know that they can get you to become their angry army that goes up against whatever they don't agree with. That's all it is. And if they genuinely cared, if they genuinely, utterly cared, you would know that. You would see so many more programs to help people. You would see so many more opportunities for awareness and bringing communities together. Like, for example, I love drag queens. I think they're amazing. You heard me talk about RuPaul before. I love RuPaul. I think Drag Hour for kids is awesome. I think that family-friendly drag shows are awesome. But if you talk about sex in front of my six-year-old, I'm going to kick you in the penis that you still have. Period. End of story. Like, there is absolutely, I mean, you can't be against drag queens and then at the same time be okay with Disney princesses. Like, either you're okay with people dressing up to be something different or you're not, right? Like, so I think what I really want to share here, Greg, is that it's not black and white. You're not conservative and you're a bigot. You're not, you know, you don't believe a certain thing and it means that you have this laundry. I'm not that person. And spiritual people usually aren't, right? Like, I have actual ideas and values and things that I believe in. I have a child with special needs. And I am, you know, ashamed to say that when I was growing up, I was a card-carrying social Darwinist, survival of the fittest. Well, you know what? Look at what my life would be like. I've been wrong. I spent a lot of time not realizing how bad racism was until I heard, Chris Rock talk about how his mom had to go to a veterinarian to get her teeth out. I do not for one moment profess to say that these things don't exist, but I will say, be careful of the people who point them out to you all day long because they're not your friends. They're trying to use you to get upset so that they can make you do things to benefit them so that they can keep you in subjugation to their whims. And they've been doing it for thousands of years. And that is the message. That's what I want to wake people up to. It's not about whether or not you believe in racism or whether or not you voted for Trump or Biden. It's about listen to who's telling you and what they're telling you. And then if it right after that, they say, but trust me, I can save you. That's where you have to worry.
Yeah. Oh my God. Do you get into this in any of your other platforms?
No, I saved this shit just for you.
Oh my God. You got the whole, did I? Yeah. What in the world? I mean, it's very interesting, compelling stuff.
But you can tell that my heart is in it, right? Like, I'm not just here saying a bunch of stuff because it sounds good or because I'm trying to make you like me, right? Like you can tell that I genuinely have a heart for people And this is like a wake up call. This isn't like a, oh, so vote for me. Like, oh, by the way, I'm also voting, you know, like I'm like, you know, running for office. Like, it's not that. It's like, I value humans so deeply and the sovereignty of every one of us as a god or a goddess incarnate. And I want them to see themselves that way too. I want them to recognize nobody's above anybody else. We're all collective consciousness having a human experience.
Yeah.
So it's really important to me that people understand that I don't think I'm better than you. I don't think you're better than me. Just listen to me and activate that part of yourself that is all powerful. And then you won't need all of these things that tell you how much your life sucks. Because if people tell you your life sucks enough, you're going to start to believe it. And yeah. That's where we get into these money problems, like you said before, with the people who have and the people who have not.
Yeah. No, and I think this is a message that will appeal to my core audience, which I think I had a download as we were talking, is actually...
Oh, do you need to use the restroom?
She got in the joke before I did. I was about to make a joke too. Okay, fine. You know what? I'll give that one to you. I'll give that to you. that's good. That's good. Okay. Tell me this. Amy Lee Westervelt, Human Design. I know we went into this last time, but I do want to, I think we want to know more about this. I've always been curious about it. I've seen it. You know, there's the gene keys too. And there's whenever people build off of astrology and these kind of, you know, Myers-Briggs, whatnot things, you go, okay, but what makes this one the one? And what I'm curious in your experience. Yeah. How did you again, you've told me before, but for people that don't know you, so that would be everybody in this case. How did you get into human design? Where did it come into your life? And why is it still as much a part of the fabric of what you do, if it still is?
Yeah, so I saw it on Zuckerbook.
Me too.
At first I kind of thought that it was just another one of those personality tests, Myers-Briggs, whatever. And I was like, oh, this is stupid. And the girl actually that kept sharing it, I actually blocked her because I'm like, I don't want to see this. And then it kind of started showing up everywhere. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I got my chart. And most of my chart actually is the same. It's just that one thing that shifted. But I started to recognize there were a lot of things that made sense about the way that things happened in my life and the way that the trajectory of my life had gone up to that point. And I started experimenting with it and learning about it and, you know, kind of where it came from. And it really kind of activated something in me. And I started experimenting with it with my clients. And, you know, here we are, 3 years into using human design in my work. I'm not a human design coach. There's lots of people that's what they specialize in. And that's all they talk about. I would get so bored. To me, it's a diagnostic tool. But I have to say that in hundreds of clients that I've worked with, I've never had anybody not be blown away by their human design and just be like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea that this stuff could be there. The thing I really love about it, it's based on your birth time. So you, I used to say you can't mess it up, but clearly you can.
Right.
But it's not conditional on how you're feeling. I feel like Myers-Briggs, like, you know, the MBTI thing, like you basically, if you're having a bad day, you're going to get a different answer than, you know, like if you're in a good mood. And I don't like that. So it's pretty accurate. I know all my kids' human designs. They all make sense. My parents, my husband. So it's a really powerful tool, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what are some of these things? Okay, now this is the part where I ask about myself, but yeah. I am curious about, you know, okay, so Greg Bornstein, generator, emotional authority, split definition, 6-2 role model, hermit. I mean, I know there's a lot about like the cross and whatnot. I mean, where are these, are before you get into what they mean, like,
Which question, Greg?
Well, the question is this. Where do these even come from? I mean, is it a star alignment? Is it? I mean, I guess it has to be because it's birth time and whatnot, but why are there so many different
songs about rainbows?
Yeah, and numbers and all these just different. I mean, it's a complicated looking. This is why I get weirded out by it, because it, you look at this thing and it looks very strange, almost like a some kind of, I don't know, cyberpunk invention.
Well, what if you look at it in terms of the chakra system? Like if you look straight down the middle, and then kind of like it's got some funky stuff on the side. That's what it is. It's
that makes sense.
It's a combination of the Tree of Life, right? So Kabbalah. You've also got the I Ching, which is Chinese philosophy, and then you've got astrology, and then the Hindu chakra system. So if you take them all, you put them in a bowl, you shake them up, that's what you get. You get human design. So human design is the study of the science of differentiation. And you know, I love to bash on systems, right? So here we go. Society is very much designed to be efficient and economical. And the way that we're economical is we put people into as many groups as we can, and we serve the same group, the same stuff. So let's take the example of the elementary school cafeteria. You remember those giant, like industrial sized vats that would make American chop suey for like 800 kids or however many kids are in the school?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. How much flavor was in that crap, right? Like not much, because they'd take like this much spaghetti sauce over this much pasta, and so it created this economic thing that was easy to buy in bulk. You didn't have to make small meals. That's why when you go to like a really fancy restaurant, you get like this itty bitty piece of food, because they basically like, you know, masturbated the thing to like put it on the plate for you. Like it's definitely like it's like a whole thing.
Okay. So, yes.
So, well, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they had to finesse it. They had to like coax it, the flavors out of it or whatever. So bad example. And so society is set up to be very economical. You're a girl, you're a boy, you have blue eyes, you have green eyes. You guys all have light skin, you have dark skin. And again, one of the ways that we create, you know, controversy and all these things is to pit different people against different people. So human design is all about how we're all so much more unique than that. Like we have so many, and even among, like you and I are both generators, but you're an emotional generator and I'm a sacral generator. You know, there's different lines, even though you're a 6-2, emotional generator, there would be a different 6-2 emotional generator that would have completely different makeup than you. So we're just constantly, we're niching down and kind of bringing it down to the point where you are so unique. You won't find anyone who has the exact same human design as you. And so the more that we look at individuality, the more that we're starting to align our systems and our bodies and our minds to have the best experience here on the planet. So for example, something that people don't usually get into in human design, and I'll show you where it is, but you can't really see it. If you look at your chart where you've got those cute little arrows at the top,
yeah.
Inside of those arrows, I could tell you what the arrows mean, but inside of the arrows.
Let's look. Why not?
Okay. Sure. So here you have these arrows, and inside of these arrows, there are actually numbers. And in this particular arrow, which talks about digestion, so the top left arrow, the one across from 6-2 role model, there's a little white arrow.
Yes.
Inside of that, there is the information that talks about what's called your primary health system. Your primary health system talks about how you're meant to eat, how you're meant to digest, how you're meant to consume. So some people have consecutive taste, which means that they're meant to just eat all of the peas and then all of the corn and then all of the beef, and they're not meant to mix them. Some people have non-consecutive taste where they're meant to eat their food together. Some people are meant to eat in direct light. Some people are meant to eat in indirect light. Now, if you're a parent of a whole bunch of kiddos, right? If you're, you know, that's not necessarily going to be the most economic thing to have some kids who like to eat cold food, some kids who like to eat hot food. So what do? You just kind of go, oh, well, I'm just going to take care of everybody and do what I can do. But what this is saying is that each one of us, when we have our own individuality, has the opportunity to create the specific constraints and situation that gives us the best shot to have the most aligned life. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's kind of wild that, I mean, why do I feel like there's like a magical component to this? There is, right?
I mean, it really depends on where your suspension of disbelief ends, right? Because people talk all the time about how silly homeopathic medicine is, but they'll pop an aspirin, no problem. It's like, why is it that, you know, herbs or whatever that you find in the garden can't do the same thing to cure your headache that a pill from a pharmaceutical company can? Now you may say, well, that's because it's science. Well, so there's no science, like there's no cause and effect that we can prove from those things. So it really depends. But to answer your question, it was channeled by a gentleman named Alan Krakauer in 1987 on a beach in Ibiza, where he heard all these downloads of this voice that just basically told him write all this stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, esoterically, sure, it's bunk. But like, what about gravity? Like, how do you explain gravity? How do you explain solar flares? How do you explain the aurora borealis? Like, either you believe we live in a world where shit happens or you don't. There's really kind of no gray area, I think. I think people like to create gray area. I think a lot of times people are like, well, this sounds crazy. You're right, it does. But for me personally, to tell you that I've had probably 200 people do human design readings, and not one of them has ever said, oh my gosh, that's not me. Like, that doesn't describe me at all. I think the odds, and these aren't like questions like, oh, I'm getting a P. Like, this is like, okay, so you are a person who likes to sit in the same spot and do your work at the same. So for example, Greg, you like to move around. You like to go to a coffee shop and do some work, and you like to go sit down and do some, and you don't like to do things at the same time every day. You like that fluidity, right? That's yes. Something that I can tell from looking at your chart. With hundreds of people, not once has someone said, no, actually, I like to sit down and do it. And if they did say that, then I would say something like, okay, is that what you think you're supposed to do? Or is that what you actually want to do? Because there's a conditioning component that comes into it too. So I get that people don't believe in it, but like, if it even has the possibility to support your life in some way, if I can convince you that your brain is not here, or your brain is, but your decision-making capability is somewhere else in your body. And when you listen to that, when I tell my clients, start listening to your sacral. If you're a generator, you're supposed to listen to your sacral. You're supposed to listen to that leaping feeling that, yes, I want to do that. No, I don't want to do that. When you start listening to that, your life improves exponentially. So like, it's not like go buy this program, go eat this pill, go cut your leg off. We're not talking about things that are going to be, you know, detrimental. Try it. And if it doesn't work, then you can say that it's bunk, but like, why not at least entertain the idea?
Very interesting. I'm curious what your answer is to this now. Okay. This got me thinking, this whole notion of bunk. I don't know why I did this, Amy Lee, but I did. I went on a first date about 2 weeks ago with an atheist. An atheist neuroscientist. Yeah, I know. It was painful. It was pretty painful. And I kept trying to, I really did. I kept trying to look for, I don't know. I kept trying to see. I was explaining the placebo effect. Also, I found this girl very interesting because her sister, total opposite. She's like a hypnotherapist. She's into the spiritual stuff, all this stuff. I'm going, okay, so your sister's the complete opposite of you. Like, what about the unconscious? And do you take, oh, but what even is the unconscious? I mean, tell me this. I guess my question is this. What was my human design based on the chart you've seen telling me Why did I even go on a date with this person? One of my charts says Greg is going to put himself through the intellectual rigor and torture of entertaining a material empiricist.
What in your chart says that? Okay.
Is there something there?
Well, I'm looking, hold on, I'm looking at it. I mean, there's a couple of different things that I see. You have a very strong G center, which means that you know your identity. So you're not worried that you're going to go somewhere and have somebody, you know, like Charles Manson you into a cult. Like, there's no worry that someone's going to take your sense of self, your core sense of self, and turn it on its head. So that makes a lot of sense that you could very easily put yourself in a container like that, where you could be around somebody that's completely different than you. You have an open head, so you don't have like concrete ideas about things, and you like to hear other people's take on things. And so I think that that's another thing that, you know, you're just like, let's see how dastardly this can go. And you have an open heart center, and open heart center is about, you know, worthiness and about like validation. And so there's like, maybe there's a part of you that wanted to be like, I'm going to go on a date with somebody that's so ridiculously not aligned with me so that I can justify to myself, like, okay, so there are people that aren't a good fit. It's not just that you can't find a person. Like, here's somebody that maybe I could consider myself, I don't know, not morally superior to, but maybe like spiritually superior to. And so that could be another subconscious thing.
Interesting.
I mean, there's a lot to dissect, but those are the couple of things. Also, you have a close spleen, so you are very intuitive. And so you probably felt like, I know who I am. And if I go on this date, I'm going to pick up on the nuances. But I think honestly, it was probably curiosity. It was probably like, I want to see where is it that this person, like, you wanted to experience what it was like to be in the energy of someone who genuinely didn't believe, so you could see where your belief is the strongest.
Oh, now that's good. I think that's it. It was super interesting. I mean, and it was definitely, it's funny that the people that accuse you of making the gods in the gap argument, which is a classic atheist thing. It's like, oh, we can't explain this, therefore God did it. And atheists always use that as saying, oh, it doesn't make sense. But they do the very same thing. It's sort of what you were saying before about oppressors. They twist it around. They go, well, you know, look at the placebo effect and the unconscious, and doesn't that, and they go, yeah, but that doesn't just mean that then it's magic. I'm going, well, you're using your logic against me then, because I didn't say it was just magic. I'm saying...
You and I, we kind of fall into a very specific type of creature called the rational mystic. So if you take a triangle and you put the occult, religion, and atheism or agnosticism, we're kind of in the middle, because yes, you need agnosticism. You need that feeling of like the practicality of it, right? Like, so like kind of science, you need that, like, okay, I need some concrete, but at the same time, that's lacking any kind of safety or foundation. So that's no good all by itself. You look at religion, you've got theology and like the connectedness and the knowing that you're going somewhere and that you're protected, but you also don't have the, like, you know, the 3D component of it there. So that's really no good. And then you've got the occult, where you're definitely connected, but there's nothing above you because you are it. So that doesn't really work. So when you take the three of them and put them together and kind of come into the middle area, that's the rational mystic. That's the person that's like, I can't explain away any of this. And all of it in the quantum field is truth. It's like, one day my husband had my daughter watch a documentary about flat earthers. And she's like, Mom, the earth is flat. You don't understand the earth. That, like, here's all the evidence. And then my husband went, okay, good. Now watch this one about round earthers. And then at the end of the two, she was like, and he's like, they both are true. It depends on who you are and where you are and what's going on. They're both true, and neither one of them is true. And she was just like,
Whoa. That's a very fascinating exercise with a kid. I mean, do you, in a way, my parents didn't have to do that for me just because I kind of naturally
Yeah, I feel like
what?
it's a you thing.
Yeah, no, that I was like looking at both sides anyways, and you know, but do you think you're, I'm curious about your daughters then. Do you think she walked away with a different, with crisper critical thinking skills? Do you see that as a result of something like that? I mean, it's, I
I
love what
mean,
you're describing because that's sort of what this show is about too.
my daughter came into the world informing me that she is from a planet called Megashiftia, and that I was chosen to be her mom in this planet because she was exiled from the planet she came from. And none of that was prompted by me in any way, shape, or form. So I would argue that this person already existed, and we're simply nurturing, who she came here to be.
Very interesting. Interesting. Have you, yeah, where do you fall on the alien spectrum? You intrigued by it?
On the aliens, but I mean,
Do you
alien implies
care?
it's so ethnocentric, isn't it? To like imply that everything outside of us is an alien compared to what? Compared to humans, sure. But then I guess on their planet, we're aliens. Like, what even is an alien? Like, because we don't. I mean, I don't think anybody doesn't think aliens exist. I think they want to believe it. I think they're afraid of it, but. The idea that we're the only beings in any galaxy anywhere is just, it's laughable, in my humble opinion. Do I necessarily want to meet one? No, I saw signs. That was enough for me. Like, I carry, I actually have a little bit of water everywhere just in case for that reason. But yeah, I mean, they exist, sure. And I would argue that they're probably walking around among us all the time. They probably look like us, for all I know.
Okay, fair answer, fair answer. Now look, this is interesting. What is you mentioned it. Memory revision sort of sounds like hypnosis, sounds like NLP.
Caught that, did you?
Yeah.
Memory revision is a technique that was, I don't know, invented, what do you call it, by Neville Goddard. Are you familiar with Neville?
Oh, I am familiar. I have not done a deep dive into the works, but often cited among the Napoleon Hills of the world and manifest. Yeah, give me some Neville bits. What? Why is Neville worth taking a dive into?
My goodness, Neville, I should just go get. I have the complete works of Neville Goddard, but he was so before his time. I believe he was born on Barbados, but he was just so brilliant in his understanding of emotions and feelings. I mean, he's the original feeling is the secret guy. In fact, you can read that excerpt, that feeling is the secret, online for free on feelingisthesecret.com. It's like it'll probably take you 20 minutes to read it, and it depends on how slow you read. But it's all about how like. You should never, ever, ever, ever think about anything that isn't pleasing to you. Why would you? Why would you entertain those feelings in your body? You don't have to. And again, going back to politics, if you look at all the incendiary stories that are out there, it's to incite anger in you. It's to keep you angry, keep you on edge, keep you voting, keep you stressed, to keep you in the melee. And you don't have to be. And if you just imagine, like, if I said to you, oh my gosh, Greg, it's terrible. Today in Australia, 200 monkeys died in a terrible fire. You'd be like, oh my gosh, that's awful. I had no idea. And I'd be like, I know, because I made it up. It's not real. Like, you
Right.
can, like, literally go in and out of emotion as quickly as you can say that something happened or something didn't. I mean, we see this all the time when we think celebrities died and then they didn't. We have true. And utter suffering until we're like, oh, that didn't actually happen. And so Neville's thing is revision. So before you go to bed at night, something went shitty that day, you rewrite it. And so we do this all the time with clients. Like I had a client the other day, and she was in a situation with a guy when she was younger, and she didn't advocate for herself and she didn't stand up for herself. I said, let's go back there right now. I'll go wait in the car. You go in there. I'll wait in the car. You go in, you say what you need to say. She went in there. She said what she needed to say. She visualized him reacting a different way than he was before. And it was like a whole different thing. Brought all of this power and this knowingness back into her body. And when we were done with the, you know, the hypnosis, meditation, whatever, she was like a whole different person. We completely altered her timeline. And we did. And so now she has a completely different understanding of that memory and the way that that memory went.
That's cool stuff. I love that. I love that. It's very, definitely. It sounds like a predecessor too. That, I mean, I know we talked last time about timeline therapy as well, and mm-hmm. some of the NLP techniques. So it definitely seems like that is a very simplified but useful way of going about the world. I mean, do you feel that with a person like that or in a situation like that, you still have to clear the pathway for that to be able to happen? Because how, I mean, this is my
so
overhand.
You gotta go find the gestalt. You gotta find the original place where okay. limiting belief was created. So in this case of this client, you know, she didn't advocate for herself. Her ex did something really crappy, or her partner did something really crappy. Instead of sticking up for herself, she just kind of went along with it. And that perpetuated the way that she behaved with men going throughout her whole life. And so what we did was we went back to the first time that she didn't put herself first, the first time she didn't advocate for herself, allowed her to make a new choice. And then it went back through the timeline and it kind of corrected the trajectory of all the things that had happened up until that point.
Interesting. I love that. I love it. This is the power of this stuff. Those listening out there.
So much. Can I just, I know you asked the questions, but I have the thing to say.
Yeah.
I love how skeptical you are of 98% of the population, and you're always looking for the bullshit. And I love that despite that, with us, like with me, you know my heart so much that you don't look for where I'm lying. Like I've already proven my authenticity, and it, we just get to have this beautiful conversation where I just share. And I love that, you know, because that's not like, I don't know, like that's not really you, you know, like you're usually like, okay, really? That's how you feel? Like, all right, let's see if you really feel that. And when you're like, no, like if Amy Lee says it, that's how she feels. And it's just a really good feeling. And I just wanted to point that out.
I appreciate that. I'm now wondering if I should be harsher. oh no, she's cringing.
That turd that you downloaded, what happened with that?
It is something that's interesting because I, and this is a criticism I've had from people on the show, they go, well, Greg, actually someone that I really respect said this to me, and I'm like, oh god, this woman, she told me, Greg, look, I like the episodes you do where it's just you more. And I like those episodes too sometimes. I should do more of them. But, you know, the solo episodes, because when you have guests on, there are times when I feel like you don't necessarily express your skepticism fully. Or it's two kind of things. And look, again, this is a simplification, but it's either they're saying some wacky stuff and you're just kind of like, okay. But you can tell there's more skepticism in you that's unspoken. Fair enough. I will say there are times when that happens, though there's only so much you can press someone if you're trying to artfully, artfully getting to, is there anything beyond what they're speaking of? And then two, then there's like the people that I'm, you know, I have hypnotists that I really respect that come on this show and change workers and or people in the paranormal field who've been out there for decades. And I kind of get like a, you know, a fanboy moment. And so what's been interesting is the interview. And I don't know if you found this on your show, but the interview and the conversation as a form of self-expression. I want to be true to myself. And I also want to be true to like the connection between what's happening in here versus what's coming out, which I think I'm even doing right now, though, you know, the doubting mind's like, or is there other stuff you could be saying? Could you be harsher? Do you really believe all this stuff? Blah, 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 blah. But I, for some reason, I will say, Amy Lee, that despite all that, I do feel, and I'm going to say this without being like, oh yeah, you're my soul sister. But in a way, it is, maybe we're the same human design. Maybe it's the frequency. I don't know. But I do feel that there is a natural flow in this conversation that is sometimes harder to capture in other interviews.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I want to clarify, I'm not saying part and parcel that you agree with everything I'm saying. I'm saying that I like knowing that you don't think I'm bullshitting, meaning like I'm saying something because I think it's what people want to hear, or that I'm saying something to try to create a persona of, and you're like, that's not even what you really think, but okay. You know what I mean? So that's really what I was saying. But to answer your question that you didn't actually ask me, but more
no, there is a question somewhere, but let's find it. Go ahead.
Is that you're a generator, so you're actually reacting to me as an audience member while also trying to carry the conversation. So there's a part of you that gets activated by these conversations, be it for or against, while you're also holding the frame of the conversation. So it makes a lot of sense that you're having an inner dialogue, or that you're having some kind of a sacral response, but at the same time, you're trying to carry the conversation. So I think you do it beautifully. And anybody who has a problem with it, you send them to me because I'll kick their ass.
No, I appreciate it. And again, you know, it's all, and you get better with these things. I'm sure you found that hosting a show too. It's, you know, the more and more you do it, it's, you start to, even Larry King, Howard Stern, people I love, I love hearing their early interview stories.
You should go on my brother's podcast. You guys are so diametrically opposed. I would want to like sell tickets to see when you'd kill each other.
Oh no, what would your brother what is your brother like?
My brother is my brother and I love him. But after we hang up today, I'm going to send you his podcast and then we can talk about it offline. But
oh my gosh, is he a materialist? Empiricist?
If that's all it was, we'd talk about it all day long. Just suffice to say that we're gonna, you know how we always have like our after episode moments. Oh, yeah. We're gonna do that.
Wait, that is scary to find out. Okay, so here's what I want to know more about. Tell me this.
Yeah.
Do you? Because I do feel like you have, I mean, the controversial views thing is always great. I love hearing the things. Okay, let me hear this. Do you think, I don't know if you do this. I get the sense that you're not like, maybe I just haven't been in the groups in a while, but there was a period of time where I was spending a lot of energy and focus hanging around these coaching groups, and it was like coaches lecturing other coaches about all this stuff. I mean, you stay out of that, you get out of the politics. I feel like you're operating in a completely different lane. Or is Amy Lee Westervelt sometimes pissing off other coaches? That's my question. Have you, when's the last time you caused a riff and people were like, oh my gosh, what is this woman talking about? She gets manifestation so wrong, blah, blah, blah. I mean, does that even happen for you? And if it has, what's the story? Give us some juice.
I think that I've said things like in the past that have been generalizations or by and large I tend to stay out of the controversial ones, but I've called people out before. One of my pet peeves, and I think you'll relate to this one, is when somebody has a really great launch and they, you know, make $40,000-$50,000 and then they turn around and sell you a masterclass on how they made the money. And oh, it's, yeah, like that's not their lane though. Like, let's say I'm a spiritual coach and I have a great launch. And then I'm like, I'm going to go live and tell you all the ways that I did this. And it's like, you're literally like, to use a Torah term, it's almost like you're boiling the calf in its mother's milk. Like, you're like, hey, you just bought this program from me. And now I'm going to show you all the ways that I subconsciously manipulated you into buying it. And I want you to buy that too. And it's like, yeah, I don't really care for that. And the other thing that I had a recent pet peeve about was I got disinvited to a summit because my email list isn't big enough. And I'm like, do you even know like how prolific my energy is and all the different places that I show up? And the people on my list are dedicated. The people on my list listen, they open my emails, they're engaged. There's not a lot of them because I call it a lot. If you're not listening to me, why am I going to keep talking to you? Can you imagine like sitting next to someone and just talking and they're not lit? Like, I call my email list. I want it to be raving fans, people who are like, oh my gosh, Emily, you get it. Or, oh my gosh, let me fight with you and tell you why you don't get it. I love that too, right? So I got disinvited because this guy was like, yeah, we need people with like 5,000 or whatever. I think I have like 3,200. But like I said, these are like warriors that would like go into battle for me, you know? So that pissed me off. So I wrote about that too. But by and large, yeah, I don't play like the little games. I'm not in the groups where they talk about the MLM-ness of coaching. I mean, it boggles my mind that people give people a hard time for coaching coaches as if somehow you get to this upper echelon of coaching and you're just supposed to know what's going on. You're never supposed to have any emotions or have anybody that you can reach out to or vent to because you're now at this level. Like, you're always going to need someone to reach up to no matter what. So yeah, I definitely, I get hot and bothered about those things and they take away my precious energy. So I tend to stay out of them.
Yeah, that's a good skill. But I think the skill that we all want to leave this conversation with, or at least that, yeah, what is this transition? No, I was thinking about, you know, as you were talking about this, the way that you've created yourself, this persona, and the way that you are now moving from dream coaching or dream design coaching to the magnetic goddess, do you have a different view about our, well, I guess dreams and goals? One of the things, and I'll preface this by saying that one of the things that, certainly, like you said earlier, that has become more apparent the more I talk to people that were very specialized in manifestation, is so much of it is most people don't even know what they want, and they mm-hmm. want what someone told them they should want. So I think we got into this last time, like,
yeah,
whose dreams are you manifesting, yours or the ego's ideas of dreams? What is your take on that now, though? If you're sitting down and going, hey, I don't like my life, I'm in a job I don't like, I'm in a relationship, or I'm not in a relationship, or I am in a relationship that could be better, but I'm not going to just sit around and make a vision board, or am I? I mean, how do you guide people on taking those initial steps so they can get towards the glamour, I guess? What is the latest in your experience that we can take to really do it?
For your human design, you are going to sit around and make a vision board. I just checked. You are a concrete manifester. So you are going to want to create things very specific, very masculine energy, very much like this car, this trip, we're going on this private jet. Like, this is the color of the interior. Yeah. So very much vision boards for you. Same with me. So for me, what I've come to realize is that what I'm searching for, what I desire, I've recognized as I've slowed way down, right? I've moved away from the egoistic, you know, six-figure months and all these things that really don't matter. You make like $23,000 and everything from that point on is like, eh. I mean, you know, like, you don't really feel a difference. Like, it's like, you have all your bills paid and then what? You've got money that's sitting there until, you know, you send it to the IRS. Like, it seems like this big thing, but it's really, at least in my experience as someone who has made six-figure months, it's really not that big of a deal. So once you get all that out of your system and you've done all these things and you're like, whoa, you know, and you start to quiet down. For me, it's about that like Thanksgiving weekend feeling. So you know how like when you're little and you got out of school on Wednesday and your mom picked you up, and then it was like party for the next 4 days. Like, maybe you were going ice skating, maybe you're going Black Friday shopping, but your whole nervous system would just kind of calm down and you'd just be like, this is amazing. Like, life can't get any better than Thanksgiving weekend. We're going to the mall with everybody to walk around on Saturday. Like, we're going to go to the movies, like everything, the world was out in front of you on Thanksgiving weekend. You had enough time that there was nothing to worry about. There were no tests coming up. And honestly, that's really the feeling that I try to help my clients create, is the Thanksgiving weekend feeling, the feeling in your body of like toes in the sand, margarita in my hand, maybe, or maybe I'm sitting on my couch at home and I'm watching Netflix and the air conditioner's going and my feet are up. It's Thanksgiving weekend. So that's kind of, I think, where we've gone, is like, rather than feeling like you have to have all this outside edifice to feel the feelings you want to have, let's focus on feeling the feelings now. And then it's almost like you don't need all the stuff. You don't need the places to go. You don't need all the outside stuff. And the moment you don't need it, that's when it's like, hey, do you want to go with me to Fiji? Hey, I saw your podcast and I'd love to hire you. Hey, do you want, you know, it's like, when you don't need it, it's all there. And the moment that you start to need it again, it all disappears. It's a very interesting paradigm, but for, you know, as much as I've been doing this work, I know that it's true.
That's interesting. So it makes me think from a practical perspective, even if I were to start vision boarding, you would want to go, okay, sure, this, you know, you see a house in California that's beautiful, and maybe I've been holding on to that my whole life, but that doesn't necessarily mean, and I haven't, but it's an example, but, you know, if I were to tune into what my Thanksgiving weekend feeling is, I could probably eradicate. It would be very different, I think, than a lot of these external constructs that I've created. Do you find that's the case for your clients?
Oh, absolutely. And most of what you really want, you already have. You just don't know you want it.
Whoa. Whoa. That's the mind-blowing cincher right there. Yeah. Very interesting. Amy Lee Westerveld, the magnetic goddess. Is that what you are?
It's not so good when you say it, Greg.
Is that it? Is that, yes, you've moved to magnetic goddess. We're going to link to all your stuff. We got your website. We've got your, well, is your website the main? I mean, you can get to your Instagram and everything from there. Is that where you direct people?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I resonate, you're going to hunt me down wherever you can find me. So I'm not worried about it.
Yes. And of course, the podcast will be changing soon as well, but you can find all of that there. Amy Lee, we're going to make sure that this episode actually gets out this week for real, so that people can hear you. And yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting conversation. We went all over the place, but I also think perhaps even, I didn't even realize that there probably was some kind of a transformation happening behind the scenes as we were listening. You're an energy activator. You activate certain energies as people engage with you. So I definitely feel that. I appreciate you giving your energy today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. We always have so much fun when we hang out.
Love it. Love it. Thank you again, Amy Lee. Come back again soon.
Absolutely. Will do.
Amy Lee Westerveld, thanks so much for coming on the show. If you've made it this far, that means I didn't mess up and delete the file from the hard drive by accident. Amy Lee's great. I could talk to her forever. Very cool woman. And I think she spoke to you. I mean, the last time I checked my Spotify numbers and looked at the demographics, I'm pretty sure the highest ranking group of listeners is Heidi Klum lookalikes that are desperate for their husband's attention. So I think the message resonated. Thank you, Rodney McGilvery, for the theme music. Thank you, Zero Boy, for the pre-theme music. Thank you for listening. Talk soon. Watch the skies.